And people can listen in at CFRC 101.9 or CFRC.ca.
Yeah, and we play basically all of our music from the 70s, the 80s, 90s, and current in all different genres.
And we share all of our nonsense and memories. I really hope people listen in.
Me too. See you there.
Hello and welcome to Salt Licked in Rapture. I'm your host, Nishan Tung. Salt Licked in Rapture is a sonic exploration of, to quote Virginia Woolf, violent waves of emotion. Featuring both known and lesser-known musicians and poets, a special emphasis is placed on oddball, enigmatic, outsider artists whose work invokes dreamscapes and feelings of alienation, nostalgia, melancholy, existential unease, and yearning. Join me on Fridays at 8 p.m. on CFRC 101.9 FM.
You're listening to Kingston's only campus community radio station, broadcasting 24/7, 365 on 101.9 FM and CFRC.ca. Tune in for the best local programming.
Good morning. It is 11 a.m. on Friday, October 3rd, and you're tuned in to CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, and this is Kingston Currents. CFRC's news programming is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. In today's episode, we'll be covering an exciting art tour coming up in Kingston this weekend, a brand new release from a local author, and some headlines directly from the city of Kingston. Just in time for Autism Acceptance Month this October, local author Julie Green has released her new book, Motherness, a deeply personal memoir detailing her experience as an autistic mother raising an autistic child. Green, diagnosed nearly a decade after her son, reflects on the challenges and insights of autism, from masking and feeling othered to empathy and belonging. Green sat down with CFRC to discuss this new release. So to start us off, I was wondering, for those who don't know you yet, if you could introduce yourself and maybe share a bit about your connection to Kingston.
Ooh, okay. So I'm a writer. I was born in Cornwall, Ontario, and lived in England for, gosh, a decade, lived in Toronto for another decade, and then in the height of COVID, for some strange reason, we randomly decided to move to Kingston and have been here ever since. And we love it. So that's what, almost 5-6 years.
Now you're releasing Motherness. I was wondering if you could speak a bit to what inspired you to write it and why now was the right time to share this story.
Yeah, so it was a little bit strange. It took me, my son was diagnosed with autism at 3, and I didn't know a thing about it aside from what everyone seemed to know, which is Rain Man, which is not really a very grand stereotype. And it took me a lot of time to realize that I might be autistic as well, because my son and I, there were glaring similarities, but there were so many differences as well. And I became involved in writing about parenting, worked for a parenting site as a staff writer. And I got to know, just I think through the comments, an autistic woman who had an autistic child, and thought, okay, the penny dropped. She and I were so very similar. And I started to learn how autism can look a little bit different in females, and sort of approached my GP about it. And honestly, she said, fine, I'll put you forward for an assessment, because I know about your son, and I know you've had kind of a medical history with, you know, depression and anxiety, different things. And then I honestly forgot about it. And we moved to Kingston. And then I think I was on a wait list for about a year and suddenly got a call during the pandemic saying, you're having this assessment. So it was via Zoom, which was strange, with a panel of doctors. And then I don't know, maybe a month or so later, we had another meeting and they said, yes, you are. And here's like a 9-page report. So it was very, very strange process. They interviewed my mother. It was like about a half day, very grueling, lot of sort of tests and like a very comprehensive medical and just life history, if you will. And so what I think happens when something is pretty momentous, I was 44, so you've gone all this time in your life thinking you are who you are, and it just paints everything in a different light. So I started looking back at all these different things that had happened in my life and going, oh, okay, well, with this new information, I'm looking at things a little bit differently. And then also kind of comparing with my son's experience, I was just writing through things because that's always been my way of processing things. And I think in doing that, I eventually realized, you know, this story is a little bit bigger than me. I think this is what happens with memoir. You have to weigh against this idea that's very, very unnerving and cringeworthy, sharing so much personal information. But when you realize a lot of other mothers and women out there potentially could see themselves. And basically, I hadn't read any books like this. There seemed to be very few narratives. I mean, about autism generally, it's either a superpower and you're a savant, or it's the biggest tragedy and you're like a cross to bear for your parents. And there seemed to be no in between. And I hadn't really read anything about, there were starting to be a few books about autistic women, but not really in relation to being a mother as well. So I just felt like, since I was exploring that maybe it would be good for other people to, you know, you write the book that you wish you had, I think. And that's pretty much what happened. It was a very roundabout way of getting there and a roundabout way of describing it now. But that's pretty much what happened. It was like a 10-year process of uncovering things and then really only a year to write and then 2 more years to wait for it to be published. But yeah, it's such a long, long thing. So I often joke actually that, you know, I could have probably given birth to 2 human babies in the time it takes to to publish one book. But you know, I'm happy it's out there now, and I'm already getting feedback that a lot of women, a lot of parents are really relating hard to it, and that makes kind of the discomfort worthwhile.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're gonna dive into a lot of that. I have to circle back, but my first question was just that you've lived and written here in Kingston. I was wondering if you could speak a bit to how the local community shaped both your writing and the experiences that you've written about.
Well, the funny thing is, when I was first moving in Kingston, I actually got a little bit more involved in the visual art scene. I was, that's always been a passion of mine as well. So I was sort of dividing my time with a little bit of freelance writing. But actually I was getting kind of involved in some of the local galleries here. I was with Martello and Frameworks and just found that quite a nice community to get involved with, and actually haven't really got too involved in the writing scene here. Writing's such a, it's a very isolating thing, or it can be. I probably should try. It's hard to kind of break through that anxiety and connect with people through what's normally a very private experience. But now I'm having to do a lot of that. But no, initially my breakthrough in getting sort of settled in Kingston. First there was the delay with the pandemic. We moved to this beautiful city, and I remember how difficult it was because you'd look around all these amazing storefronts and all these shows. Well, you know, the Grand was there, all these places, the Screening Room, some of my favorite places now were just shuttered. And it was torture because we couldn't go in anywhere. So there was such a delay in just kind of being able to explore the city properly. So it took us a while for it to feel home, I think. But when I did start, it was actually through the visual arts community here instead, where I started to connect with people.
Wow. Yeah. And also kind of on this local note, there's a lot of conversation about inclusivity and awareness, and we have a lot of great resources and community here. But where do you see progress locally, and where do you think we still have some work to do?
I think things are changing. I mean, I think there's obviously a lot really turning with females and like certain marginalized groups that were missed that are now being identified. So that accounts for why it seems like there are more neurodivergent people now. So there's definitely much more awareness. But on a local level, we've had a very good relationship with my son's school that's developed over years. And it's been amazing because he's been able to be at the same place since middle school. And he's definitely had a lot more, being a smaller city than Toronto, he's had a lot more individualized support. And, you know, I've gotten to know like the same teachers, the same principal. So we've really been able to develop connections there to get that support. But even in terms of Queens, actually, my son did a mentorship program here. Last year, actually 2 years. And he's extremely passionate. I write a lot about it, but his major passion is linguistics. And he was able to connect with a linguistics student here. And they would meet up every week and just chat. So it was nice to, it was a very cool community program. I think it was through Community Living mm-hmm. in Kingston that set that up. And that was a very cool thing, initiative that Queens were involved in as well.
Awesome. I didn't know we had that. So that's really cool.
Yeah.
Kind of circling back to more the meat of the memoir. Sure. You speak a lot about being diagnosed later in life. And as a woman, I was wondering if you could just, you know, speak to that and how you hope your story will help other adults who are maybe experiencing the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not a clinician, so I can't, I mean, there's just so much more information now. I think from my understanding, the DSM, which is the diagnostic manual that contains all of these things, it's changed so much over the years. And it was very much the testing and the manual and everything and all the research that was done. I mean, this happens for a lot of medical research, not just autism, things that are autism related. But, you know, girls weren't included in the research. And I think hopefully with that changing and they will hopefully broaden even and adapt some of the main, I think is something called the ADOS, which is the main measure. It's one test, one form that you fill in, the diagnostic test basically to see, but it leaves out a lot of the nuance in female presentation. Like masking is a very big part of, how autism presents in a lot of females. So I hope with time they're going to sort of evolve the whole diagnostic process. And I know some clinicians are much more aware of it now, but it takes a long time for these sort of things to catch up and change. So I see it changing. It's just, you know, the scientific community. I mean, there are studies, things are happening now, and we're just waiting for maybe the next edition or version of the DSM will include masking and will include sort of a wider presentation so that maybe it will be easier to identify girls who, so they won't have to wait till they're 44 to realize, you know, that they are autistic and rather than internalize, things as being personality flaws or, you know, what's wrong with me? Why can't I do that? Why am I like this? They'll actually have a better understanding for their neurotype rather than attributing it to like a personality flaw or personality defect.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned you've already been getting some feedback from readers. I was wondering if you could speak a bit to that. What have you been hearing?
Yeah, it's a little bit surreal. Like, yeah, I think one person said, oh, it's as if she like went inside my brain and, oh gosh, I don't know. Very, very touching things, which is still, I don't know. I can't quite wrap my head around it yet because writing is such a private thing. And I mean, obviously I had a publisher. I've been waiting, you know, to get it published. So, but I think there's this disconnect where you doesn't feel quite real that people out there in the world are suddenly going to be reading about these experiences you've had. I don't know why there's that disconnect, but it's finally occurring to me now that, oh, okay, suddenly all these people will know these things about you in your life, which is fine. That's the decision I've made, but it also is a little bit strange. And I mean, memoir is a weird beast. Like, there's so much. People might assume, oh, they suddenly know everything about you, but it's very sculpted, and there's very much that you curate what you decide to leave in, what you decide to leave out. There are a lot of things I didn't put in this book, and a lot of things I chose to for various reasons. So, but it is just amazing to see these people having that reaction and really feeling like they're seeing themselves. Because of course you hope that happens, I guess. Otherwise, why write a book? But there's no real guarantee until suddenly it's out there, and you honestly have no way of knowing if it's going to strike a nerve with people or what.
I was wondering if you could also dive into some of the misconceptions that you're hoping to tackle here.
Yeah, I guess it's speaking to a little bit like what I talked about before. I feel, it is getting better in terms of media. I mean, but you still see these two, it's a real binary, this narrative that it's either autism's like a superpower or it's a tragedy. And, you know, we're just people, we're complex, nuanced people. And I just hope people can start to just see more of a complex, complex figures that we are. So we're not just all the stereotypes that we have in the media. But also, I mean, I would hope, I am not sure this will happen, but I hope that people who really don't know anything about autism will pick up a book like mine and walk in our shoes a little bit, understand what parents go through. There's so much judgment of parents, especially when their children have what they call behaviors. You know, they have meltdowns in public, and there's still so much criticism and judgment, you know, looking at parents and particularly mothers, like, you know, if you had just done, you know, it's a discipline issue, or you've done this wrong, or you've done that wrong. So I would love it if people who really don't know much about autism read this book, and but as opposed to the people who are already going to see themselves. But I mean, both fantastic.
Once again, that was Julie Green, a Kingston author who just released her memoir, Motherness, detailing her experience as an autistic mother raising an autistic child. Motherness is now available at Canadian retailers, including Novel Idea downtown. You can visit Green's website, juliemgreen.ca, to keep up with all of her projects. The second annual Kingston Art Tour is set for October 4th and 5th, bringing artists and performers together across Kingston and the surrounding area. Organizer Joanne Gervais says the event has already seen significant growth since its debut last year.
Last year we had about 15, 20 exhibitors, and this year it's doubled. So we have quite a few more people.
The tour features everything from painters and sculptors to musicians, performers, and even medieval sword fighters. Artists of all levels of experience are taking part. With the event being an introduction for young and emerging artists, as well as a last hurrah for artists stepping away from shows.
We also have an elderly lady who's her last show. So Robin Laws will be at the Pedal Cafe. She's 85, 90 maybe. And a friend convinced her to join and have one last hurrah. And we have the youngsters that are at the Keystone Community and Art Design Speak Join.
Gervais says the wide range of art is key to making the tour engaging for everyone and calling in new audiences.
Art lovers come. Most art lovers have somebody they're dragging with them. Their kids, their teenagers, their boyfriend, their husband, somebody, their driver, being dragged to an art tour, and they're all going, don't want to go, can we leave now? And then they walk in, and the iron is with third guys, the first guys they meet, and they have all these guys dressed in medieval wear like Robin Hood. And they talk to them about what they're they do and what their shorts are and their costumes and regalia. And we're going to be doing a demo if you'd like to try it. These are all different ranges and attractions to various people. So I try to get people that, when you look at all the artwork, it has a wide range. So if you're going to walk into 10 Studios, something will strike your love, your attention.
Along with the range of art, there is an equally diverse array of venues from Kingston's downtown core to the rural North End. The tour spans across Kingston, Berryfield, Glen Burnie, Sydenham, and Battersea in more than a dozen venues. Gervais hopes attendees will not only experience new art, but also new places in Kingston.
Don't you realize that there's more than downtown?
And the hope is that visitors leave with more than an added piece to their art collection.
You can walk through and see all these things. And it's just fascinating because they see the working process. So usually they just see nice painting on the wall and they see the artist. They don't connect the two. I hope that they take away from the tour color, life, empathy, all their senses were tempted. And they just remember next year feeling good about going.
Once again, the Kingston Art Tour runs this Saturday and Sunday at more than a dozen venues across Kingston. You can learn more about all the weekend has to offer at kingstonarttour.com. It's been a landmark year for Kingston's Great Lakes Museum, from celebrating its 50th anniversary to winning Ship of the Year for the SS Keewatin, and now being named Ontario's Choice for Top Small Museum, Art Gallery, or Historic Site. The recognition comes from Attractions Ontario, chosen by public vote across the province. For the museum, it's yet another milestone in a year already packed with achievement. The museum's executive director, Beth Shippers, spoke with CFRC about this latest accomplishment.
We are thrilled. We are delighted. It is an honor for us to have received this award, yet another award, and it speaks volumes to the community that supports us. The staff and volunteer team have worked tirelessly to become a museum that could win an award like this.
Behind the accolades lies hundreds of hours of painstaking work, from restoring ship rooms and opening new areas to curating fresh exhibits. The museum has also been looking for creative ways to bring in new guests.
We also hosted a clay and glass art exhibit. It's called From Fusion, which is the Ontario Clay and Glass Association. We hosted that for about 2 months over the summer, which is definitely different. The theme of the exhibit was water, and it was specifically designed so that people would think of us while they were creating their artwork. So we hosted that in the museum, which I think goes a long way for kind of connecting communities that wouldn't normally be connected, the art scene with the historic maritime scene. We're very interested in working with other communities outside of museums and other museums here in the city.
The Great Lakes Museum works closely with its neighbors, whether sharing events or celebrating milestones together.
One thing that's interesting about Kingston, because I'm sure you know this, that it's the museum capital of Canada because there's so many of us here. We work really closely together. And often you will see when there's an event happening at one museum, all the other museums are coming as well and supporting and having booths. So just this past, earlier this month, we had our 50th anniversary celebration, and we had other museums in the city coming and they had booths and they were sharing their stories with the people that were coming to our museum. And we do that a lot around Kingston.
And province-wide, the win carries extra weight.
There's probably just over 700 museums, art galleries and historic sites in Ontario. So there's a lot. Most of them are small museums like us. There is obviously the large ones like the ROM and the Canadian Museum of Nature, but most of them are small. And that's a surprising number. Because there is over 700 museums and art galleries and historic sites in Ontario, it makes it really special that we were chosen for this award.
This has been a year of growth for the museum.
In 2023, so just 2 years ago, this museum saw about 8,000 people in the entire year. In 2024, this museum welcomed just over 27,000 people. And this year, in 2025, we've already welcomed 26,000 people, and it's not even the end of September. So we feel like we're really helping bring people to Kingston, and also we've added something new to the city. There is finally, like, people who live here are starting to see that we're a place to come visit as well.
So what's next? The SS Keewatin remains open for tours until November, including evening haunted walks. Winter will bring the Nautical Nights lecture series and film screenings, while staff and volunteers plan for the next stage of growth. For the Great Lakes Museum, Ontario's choice is more than a title. It's 50 years of history and a future that looks brighter than ever. Before we get into more local news, I'm going to turn to our weather and traffic report for today with CFRC's Jesse Bell.
This is your Environment Canada weather report for the week. Friday, October 3rd, 18 degrees is your daytime high, a beautiful sunny day, and that continues into the weekend, a very bright start to October. Saturday, October 4th, 19 degrees, feeling closer to 20, a perfect day to catch the Queens Gales versus Guelph Griffins football game. And Sunday, October 5th, 20 degrees with plenty of sunshine, an overnight low of 14. This is your City of Kingston traffic report for the week. We'll begin with road closures. Aberdeen Street, William 2 Johnson is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Albert Street, Princess 2 Mac is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging at 484 Albert Street. Bagot Street, Johnson 2 William is closed October 2nd from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m. for Utilities Kingston to complete a service repair. Berry Street, Queen to Colborne closed for construction-related activity at 283 Queen Street. Earl Street, Collingwood 2 Toronto closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Innovation Drive, Highway 15 to Discovery is closed September 30th from 7 p.m. to 6 a.m. for paving operations. Johnson Street at Victoria closed until October 24th for sewer separation and road rehabilitation. Lincoln Drive at Bay Ridge closed until October 10th for the construction of new active transportation infrastructure. Sydenham Street, Princess 2 Queen, closed until October 24th for the Sydenham Street community space. Tivoli Avenue, Midland 2 Sierra, closed September 29th to October 17th for the installation of new services. Victoria Street, Union 2 Johnson, closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Here are some other delays to be aware of. Bay Ridge Drive, Milford to Henderson, expect delays for the construction of new active transportation infrastructure. Cataractway Woods Drive, Centennial to Gardeners, expect delays for the construction of a new multi-use pathway. Front Road, Sand Bay to Country Club, expect delays for the installation of sanitary and water main. Gardeners Road at Centennial and Creekford, expect delays while a contractor completes intersection widening, traffic signal upgrades, and cycling and pedestrian improvements. Highway 2 to Abbeydon and St. Lawrence, expect delays to complete enhanced flood protection of Abbeydon Road, Highway 2 and St. Lawrence Avenue. Highway 15, Kingston Mills to Middle, expect delays for a contractor to complete work on the Highway 15 CNR overhead structure. John Marks Avenue and Innovation Drive, expect delays while a contractor mobilizes to start work on John Marks Ave, Innovation Drive, and Discovery Ave. Work includes curb, sidewalk, asphalt milling, and repaving. Lancaster Drive, Limestone to Jasper, expect delays while a contractor completes construction of a new sidewalk and some road improvements. Montreal Street at John Counter, expect delays for upgrades to the intersection, including new lighting, traffic signals, lanes, paving, and signage. Trudell Road, development to Danbury, expect delays while a contractor completes road and sidewalk improvements. Victoria Street and Earl Street, expect delays while a contractor mobilizes to site to start work on the second phase of reconstruction of sewer, water main, sidewalks, and road.
Thank you, Jesse. Now back to more local news. We have a few updates directly from the City of Kingston to run through this morning. Starting off, the City of Kingston has three important projects underway to provide a coordinated framework to support growth and build a complete, sustainable, and well-connected city. These projects are the new official plan, the new integrated mobility plan, and the water and wastewater master plans. The City of Kingston is inviting residents to take part in upcoming opportunities to learn and share feedback on these projects. First off, on Monday, October 20th, we have the Rural Open House, which will be held to present information, answer questions, and collect feedback on rural-focused topics contained within the first draft of the new official plan, such as agriculture, rural businesses, rural housing, and hamlets. The Rural Open House will be held at Sunnyside Hall, Cataractway Community Center, at 10:30 Sunnyside Road. Once again, this will be Monday, October 20th from 6 to 8 p.m. On Wednesday, October 22nd from 6 to 8 p.m., we'll have an open house and public information center to present information, answer questions, and collect feedback on a new official plan and the new water and wastewater master plans. This session will include updates on the integrated mobility plan as well, ahead of a dedicated public information center in November. The open house will be held at Ambassador Ballroom, Doubletree, 1550 Princess Street. On Thursday, October 23rd, there will be a community meeting held at Planning Committee, dedicated to sharing details, answering questions, and gathering feedback on the first draft of the new official plan. This will be held once again on October 23rd at 6 p.m. This will be a hybrid meeting with the following in-person and virtual options. In-person in City Council Chambers at City Hall, 216 Ontario Street, and online. To register to attend virtually, you can email Christine O'Connor, the committee clerk, at clocconnor@cityofkingston.ca. Additional information about the new official plan project, including a copy of the first draft policies and mapping, can be viewed online at cityofkingston.ca/YG220K. More information on all of these events is available at cityofkingston.ca. In another message directly from the City of Kingston, recharge your battery safely, knowledge during Fire Prevention Week. Kingston Fire and Rescue is challenging you to charge into fire safety and refresh your knowledge of battery safety during National Fire Prevention Week, October 5th to 11th. This year's theme of Charge into Fire Safety, lithium-ion batteries in your home, works to educate about how to buy, charge, and recycle safely when it comes to lithium-ion batteries. Lithium-ion batteries are found in rechargeable products such as portable electronics, mobile phones, toys, tools, e-bikes, and mobility devices. They are generally considered safe, but should be used, stored, and disposed of properly to avoid fire and injury. Ted Pasadowski, Chief Fire Prevention Officer at Kingston Fire and Rescue, states, quote, "As our homes become more connected with devices powered by lithium-ion batteries, our vigilance must increase. I urge every resident to take 5 minutes this week to check your charging habits. Never leave devices charging unattended overnight or on soft surfaces, and learn how to recycle damaged batteries responsibly. Fire safety is an active choice, not a passive hope. Let's learn together to turn a modern convenience into a safe addition to our lives." KFR will be holding a series of events around Kingston to recognize Fire Prevention Week. Tomorrow on Saturday, October 4th, is an open house and pancake breakfast from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. at Station 3, 211 Gore Road. Wednesday, October 8th, we have the Senior Center visit at 56 Francis Street. And on Friday, October 10th, there will be a display at Cataraqui Mall at 945 Gardner's Road. In addition to scheduled events, there will be KFR visits to local schools and retailers, special public appearances from Sparky, and opportunities to learn more about becoming a volunteer firefighter in Kingston. Fire Prevention Week happens annually in October to raise awareness for fire prevention and highlight growing safety trends and concerns. For more information about Kingston Fire and Rescue or fire safety tips, you can visit the city's website. In a final message from the City of Kingston this morning, Government of Canada supports Inclusive Play Project with funding from Enabling Accessibility Fund. Families in Kingston will soon enjoy the city's first highly accessible playground, thanks to funding from the Government of Canada's Enabling Accessibility Fund Small Projects component, with $125,000 awarded towards the Inclusive Play Project. The EAF is a federal grants and contributions program that supports community and workplace-based projects across Canada, aimed at improving accessibility, safety, and inclusion for persons with disabilities in Canadian communities and workplaces. The City of Kingston will receive $125,000 to support the development of the Jumpstart Inclusive Playground, an inclusive playground at Shannon Park. The Jumpstart Inclusive Playground will feature accessible play structures and transfer-free play equipment. It will also include rubber safety surfacing, ramps, and sensory-friendly elements, offering engaging opportunities tailored to a wide range of sensory needs. These enhancements will allow children of all abilities, along with their families and caregivers, to enjoy a safe and engaging outdoor space together. Shannon Park at 199 Wilson Street has been chosen as the site of Kingston's first inclusive playground because of its existing accessible play features and its close connection to the Rideau Heights Community Center's accessible facilities. The Inclusive Play Project is a grassroots initiative led by parents, educators, and community advocates. Committed to creating accessible and inclusive outdoor play spaces in Kingston. With support from the Enabling Accessibility Fund, nearly $1.3 million has now been committed through donations from individuals, contributions from foundations, and government funding. Residents can stay up to date on this initiative at the project page on Get Involved Kingston. Once again, that was an update directly from the City of Kingston on the Jumpstart Inclusive Play Project. At last week's City Council meeting, councillors were briefed on the next steps for the highly discussed former Davis Tannery lands. In late July, the Ontario Land Tribunal ruled that developer Jay Patry could proceed with a mixed-use development on the land expected to include about 1,600 residential units, including 100 affordable units within walking distance of the downtown core. The development was turned down by council in 2022, motivating the appeal to the OLT, and has been highly contested by environmental advocates like No Clear Cuts Kingston. The 13-hectare property is highly contaminated by smelting and tanning operations, home to a provincially significant wetland, and the redevelopment would entail clear-cutting almost 2,000 trees and removing 400,000 tons of contaminated soil. With the OLT decision, the planning process that has been on halt for the past 2 years will recommence with a submission by the developer of a draft plan of the subdivision. James Barr, manager of development approvals with the city, explained what comes next for council.
So the basis of land use has been established. Official plan amendment and zoning bylaw amendment parameters are in place. What comes next forward to council will be the draft plan of subdivision. That is a council approval process that will come forward to you guys through planning committee. And that will contain the very specific details about how the lots are going to be divided, roads, infrastructure, and the conditions that go along with that. Not something we would typically see in this part of town. You know, there are other districts that are more used to plans of subdivision because of how the city has grown, but that is the next step in that process. Council also does have the ability to bump up final plan approval process for a plan of subdivision for decision making as well. And then after that, the council process, unless there are amendments to either the official plan, the zoning bylaw, or the plan of subdivision, won't come back to you.
Councillor Jimmy Hassan plainly asked staff what power council holds in this situation.
And it seems to me from my colleague's question and the resident who has concern about this particular project that everyone want to stop that project, not as happen. We asked question about the environment and, you know, about the trees and the wetland and everything else. And city has spent $700,000+ and we lost that case. Staff has invested a lot of time and efforts to bring the information to the council and to the public consultation. My question is, at the end of the day, the developer has been rewarded what he wants to do. What is in hands of this council? What is in our power to achieve what we're asking, all the questions we're asking you today? Is anything still in our hand? We can stop him not to do that project or make the changes what the council or the concerned resident want? Or we're just wasting our time? What it seems to be we are powerless. We just can ask. Other than we can delay his project, what else we can achieve?
As Councillor Hassan mentioned, the city spent more than $730,000 to defend Council's 2022 decision at the OLT, and city staff estimate the developer spent just as much, if not more. City staff confirmed that Council has the authority to reject or propose amendments to future applications. However, if Council does refuse, the developer could once again appeal to the OLT.
He will go back to the court again, and then he might win again. So what we're sitting here, what we're talking about is all just wasting time and money.
City staff are in discussions with the developer to determine next steps for the project. Patry received an exemption from the city's tree bylaw for the tannery site in 2019, meaning that tree clearing could technically begin at any time. At their meeting last week, council unanimously passed a motion changing the way financial and crime reports from Kingston Police are delivered. The motion was introduced by Councillor Gregory Ridge, who explained that the changes are meant to maintain accountability while cutting down on unnecessary costs.
Well, the original purpose of this motion was to add additional financial accountability due to the Kingston Police repeatedly going over budget. Last year, after significant efforts and new financial staff leadership, they finally come in under their budget for the fiscal year. While I, and I'm sure several other counselors, still have concerns about financial stewardship, they can be addressed at council when Kingston Police Leadership present, both in the second and fourth quarters.
Ridge dove into exactly what the motion entails.
This motion does very simply three things. It takes the previous motion that had the requirement for quarterly financial reports with briefings, and it changes that motion so that, or changes that intent so that we would be receiving reports every quarter. So that would not change as in the actual documents, but that the briefings would only be after quarter two and quarter four. In addition to this, we would be adding reported crime statistics per electoral district as per the format of that's reported to for Kingston Police Services Board.
Currently, Kingston Police provide in-person presentations four times a year, but Ridge noted that these presentations can have unintended costs.
The presentations also inadvertently cause or can cause increased costs for Kingston Police Administration and overtime, specifically when they're presenting at 11:35 p.m. as per the previous meeting. While it may not be apparent to people watching online or even in the council chambers, the presentations require all senior administration and some administrative support from Kingston Police, including civilian employees, to be on hand and assisting in answering the questions from council. As their presentations can be later, this can inadvertently create additional costs. So this is kind of finding a way to balance that consideration.
The addition of crime statistics in these reports, Ridge said, will give counselors better insight into community safety.
The reporting of crime statistics may help counselors reviewing the information to see a larger strategic picture on where issues around types of crimes and community safety issues are occurring and with what frequency. This can help inform additional decision-making and also give counselors more information with which to inform constituents.
Council will now receive semi-annual briefings in June and December, while all four quarterly reports will continue to be forwarded through the city clerk's office. Before we wrap up this morning, we're going to run through your Friday forecast, a roundup of just some of the events Kingston has to offer this weekend. There is no shortage of events tonight if you're looking to get out. Tonight we have the Country Club line dancing lessons and dance party at the Grad Club at 8 p.m. Historical costume ball drag show fashion pageant spectacular at Grant Hall at 6:30 p.m. And the Life of a Showgirl late night cruise with Kingston Thousand Island Cruises at 8 p.m. capping off this week's Taylor Swift celebrations downtown. Tomorrow on Saturday, October 4th, we have the Memorial Center Farmers Market running from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. Check out these local vendors. Tomorrow on Saturday, October 4th, if you're looking for local agriculture and artisans, you can visit the Memorial Center Farmers Market from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m., the Kingston Public Market at Springer Market Square from 8:30 to 5 p.m., and the Public Market at Wolf Island Commons from 9 a.m. to 12:30 p.m. The Kingston Frontenac Library Central Branch will be hosting Vibrant Voices, a 2S LGBTQIA+ and Allies song circle from 1 to 3 p.m. And to finish off the day with some laughs, you can visit La Vida Bar and Bistro for stand-up comedy. On Sunday, October 4th, we have Interwoven, a workshop in story, kinship, and land at Little Cataraquay Creek Conservation Area from 3 p.m. to 4 p.m. Once again, those are just a few events coming up this weekend. For more, you can check out CFRC's events and concerts calendar on our website on cfrc.ca. That is all things current in Kingston for this week. Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and the Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. To listen on the go or hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Be sure to stay tuned for CFRC's afternoon lineup, featuring more news, music, poetry, and so much more. For CFRC News, this has been Christina Laurie.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear. Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office and supported by our friends at Modern City Taxi, we're pleased to present a selection from Hylia's new EP, The Piano Sessions, which was recorded with just one microphone and a grand piano. Local artist Hylia reimagines a collection of covers in her own unique style in this new release, and unlike her earlier recordings, the new release is stripped down and raw, capturing the intimacy and authenticity of her live solo performances. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visit kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream The Piano Sessions by Hylia on your favorite platforms and enjoy a selection from it called Gold Dust Woman right now here on CFRC 101.9 FM.
now on this week's Release Radar in partnership with the Kingston Music Office and supported by our friends at Modern City Taxi. We're pleased to present a selection from Cassador 2, the latest EP from Kingston rockers Cassador. The new EP takes an introspective look into feeling human in the modern day and age, set to an authentic presentation of live performed rock music. The EP preceding a new album dropping this winter is a truly local package of talent, featuring writing and performances by Julia Finnegan, Brett Emmons, Nambi, and Justin Rutledge. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via visitkingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Cassador 2 by Cassador on your favorite platforms and enjoy a selection from it called Trouble, right here now on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present David Yee, a.k.a. Wolf and Sheep Clothing's latest track, Redefine. The new song began as a guitar-focused composition but gradually drew increasing inspiration from classical music. The piece features Massimo Amodio, a third-year cellist at Queen's University, whose performance includes a melody that listeners familiar with classical repertoire may recognize. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston
Kingston Music Office website or via visitkingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Redefined by Sheep and Wolf's Clothing on your favorite platforms and enjoy it here with us now on CFRC 101.9 FM.